We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is take three we're trying to record. We are now recording on Tuesday morning. Scott, we had a couple technical difficulties, I think, with Skype last night, Monday night, but hopefully this goes smoothly.
Yeah, definitely had some technical issues. We tried two times last night and didn't work. So hopefully Skype has shaped itself up and is back to normal and we can actually record things. So, yeah, man, how's your morning? How's your Tuesday starting?
Tuesday's been okay. Monday was better. I was feeling good last night, ready to record. I'm trying to wake up this morning to give everybody a nice show. but it's Christmas week. I know you're going home to New Jersey, but anything else planned for the weekend?
Well, we're going to see Star Wars. That's a big deal Saturday night. So we're going to go and see the 3D IMAX version of that. But no, I'm excited. I'm excited to hang out with the family for, you know, almost a week and get some good time in with my brothers and sisters, my mom and my two nieces. So it's always a lot of fun.
Nice. I saw Star Wars this weekend. It was very, very good. I was very pleased with it. It made me totally forget about the prequels, which is nice. I have no complaints. Very fun movie. So I think you'll enjoy it.
Good. That's good to hear. No random Jar Jar Binks characters.
Nope, none of that.
That grew in the movie.
All of the new characters they introduced, the people as well as the other weird characters or whatever, were all very good. J.J. Abrams killed it. The thing is, because I was watching some interviews with him, he's like a Star Wars nerd.
Right.
So he wasn't going to make this crap, you know, sort of, he wasn't going to make a crappy movie like the prequels, which I think is very, very good. He set it up for a nice trilogy here.
Good. No, that's good to hear. I'm glad they kept with like the more of the old school type character, even if they're funky, you know what I mean? Like just keep it within the constraints. I think that I don't know what those constraints are. It's just, I guess it's the eye test and the ear test for me when I'm watching it, but half those characters in the newer movies just didn't pass those eye tests.
So it wasn't even just the characters though. It was the story itself. I mean,
yeah.
They're talking about like trade federations and all that crap. It's like, I'm not going to watch a Star Wars movie to hear about taxes on trades. So
yeah,
George Lucas really fell on his face there, but good. So like I said, Christmas week, we're almost coming into the new year. I've already mailed it in this year. I'm done with 2015, looking forward to 2016, but I'm just sort of coasting. I'm on autopilot right now.
Yeah, I have some things I got to finish up today, but just pretty much going to be, you know, getting ready for going for Christmas to my sister's place. We're going to be in Princeton this year. She moved from Brooklyn to Princeton, so that'll be a different setting. We're usually at my mother's house up in Mahwah. But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. As far as the year, I mean, yeah, there's pretty much, you know, I think a lot of people mail it in after Thanksgiving, what we talked about, but I'm ready to go on to 2016 at this point. And so is Mattingly, if you can hear her crying in the background.
I can hear her, yes. So later in the show, we're going to do Yankees Christmas wish list, as well as some airing of grievances for Festivus. But before we get to that, we got to talk about what is maybe the craziest live TV moment that I can remember. And that was the Miss Universe ending. Did you see this thing with Steve Harvey?
I mean, I saw the social media stuff.
Yeah,
I saw the stuff that they wanted me to see.
Yeah, I knew you weren't watching live. I wasn't watching live because I didn't even know Miss Universe was on that night. But yeah, so if anyone does not know, Steve Harvey announced the wrong winner. He announced Miss Colombia as the winner instead of Miss Philippines. It was a whole big thing. He had to then come back 5 minutes later after the celebrations was already going on and take the crown off of Miss Colombia and put it on Miss Philippines. I don't know about you, but the thing that is most painful for me to watch is awkwardness. I can watch in movies people getting killed or anything like that. The gore does not bother me, but awkwardness really bothers me for some reason. And that was one of the most awkward moments I can ever remember on TV.
Okay, so I'm on the other side of the fence. Like, yes, it looked awkward because I feel like it was meant to feel awkward because I think it was all fake, personally. I think that who in the hell is watching Miss Universe or Miss America or any of these pageants anymore? I don't know who does besides all those crazy parents who put their kids in pageants. And Steve Harvey's a perfect guy to you know, carry that out smoothly. And, you know, even when when you look at the clips, like the girl from the Philippines, she just looked like she was acting. I don't know, like it was like a bad soap opera or something. You know what I mean? Like she's a completely like C-level actress. And that was the exact reaction I was getting. So I don't know. I think they accomplished what they do. We're talking about it. Social media got a field day with it. Steve Harvey even sent out a tweet afterwards yeah. and misspelled Colombia and Philippines and got even more people mad about it. And I think that was all some PR stunt.
Steve Harvey.
I think some PR agency made out like a bandit on this.
Steve Harvey, as you said, is the perfect person to do all that because it's almost like they could hire him and be like, he'll mess up anyway. So it's not really a big deal if he messes up, but yeah, Steve Harvey, what does he have to lose? He's just trying to get ratings. Totally agree.
He's a comedian. What does he care? Like that's the type of thing he could do with no problem.
Absolutely. So one thing people I saw a lot of was like, oh my God, poor Miss Colombia. How is she ever going to recover for this? This is the best thing that's ever happened to her.
Right. That's true. She would have lost, then no one would even know who
exactly.
She
no one would be talking about Miss Colombia today if she had just lost and came in second. Instead, everyone's talking about Miss Colombia. So she's made out very, very well in all this.
So is this the Trump factor?
Could be. This is the first year Trump is not involved in the pageant.
Yeah, it's crazy. This is I don't know. I think the whole thing is just for show, and I think they did a great job. Good job.
I mean,
producers. Good job, PR agency. Good job, Steve Harvey. You guys killed it.
I can't wait for the 30 for 30.
Yeah, right. Get to the bottom of it.
It is confusing though, because I saw a picture of the cue cards, and it's like third runner up, second runner up, first runner up, winner.
I know, but that's the way it always is.
I know that's the way it always is.
It's always been confusing if you don't listen to it close.
Steve Harvey, what does Steve Harvey know?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. You know, they probably went through that, like the name, not the actual names, but, you know, practicing it for however many times. I just think it's all fake. There's no way he messes that up.
It made for good TV regardless.
Yeah.
Some more good TV recently over the weekend was the NFL. Your Jets squeaked out against the just tremendously talented Kellen Moore on Saturday night. really got past the juggernaut Cowboys there. I watched that game because it was the only one on, and as soon as Kellen Moore came in the game, I'm like, all right, here's the Jets. They're going to get, you know, fumble recovery, couple pick sixes, and this thing's going to be over. But the Cowboys put up a hell of a fight on Saturday.
I mean, Kellen Moore did throw three interceptions, but the – when you're looking at who he came in for, Matt Castle is just not an NFL quarterback. I mean, he's just awful, and he's a statue.
Okay, if Matt Castle's not an NFL quarterback, what is Kellen Moore?
He's apparently a better option.
He's a Pop Warner quarterback.
But he's better. I mean, he's better running that offense. At least he can throw the ball with a little bit of accuracy. Matt Castle can't make a throw. It's terrible. Yeah. Which leads me to believe just gives me that much more respect for the machine that Belichick has run, with the plug and play machine that he has, that actually takes away from Brady's legacy a little bit. But you know, it's really telling quite a bit. On what Belichick has built.
Are you referring to the season in which Brady was down and Castle won 11 games?
Yeah, that would be the season I'm referring to.
Realize
they actually looked like an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, so they didn't make the playoffs that year.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be this very similar thing to what happens to the Jets this year, unfortunately.
But everyone looks back at that Patriots season and is like, oh my God, you know, it's like, oh, it's Brady is just a cog in the machine. And obviously he is, but he's the most important cog. And the Patriots went 11-5 but didn't make the playoffs. They didn't even beat a team that made the playoffs that year. They played six games against teams that ended up making the playoffs, and they lost all six. So I think it was a little smoke and mirrors with that team that year.
I mean, I don't remember any of that. No one in New York remembers any
of
that.
I've had this argument a billion times.
It sounds like you have, because you were ready for some ammunition. Everybody just remembers Matt Castle stepping in and winning 11 games. That's what they remember.
And Matt Castle got paid.
Yeah, he did. He did, so... You know, I don't know. He was completely inept. I mean, he looked awful. It would have been the score would have been worse, I think, if he had stayed in the game with the way that the Jets are coming after him. So Kellen Moore at least had a little bit of elusiveness, and he actually was more accurate and stayed in the pocket and he looked better overall.
So I was looking at some stats, and the Jets have a 19% chance to make the playoffs. the best way for them to make it is they need to win out, and KC or Pittsburgh needs to lose a game, which is totally possible.
It's totally possible, but I'm pretty sure I have to look at the schedule. But I think they're playing the same teams, from what I remember. I think it's Cleveland and then Baltimore, or they had two of the same teams. So I think Cleveland and Baltimore are in there. It's just not looking good.
especially because the Jets have to play the Patriots this upcoming week.
That's our better chance, though. I mean, I think we have a better chance of beating the Patriots this week than Pittsburgh has to lose to Baltimore or Cleveland. I just don't think that's happening.
So Pittsburgh's playing Baltimore. I know Baltimore's terrible, but that's a pride issue with Baltimore. They're not going to let the Steelers come into their house and walk all over.
But they don't. They're completely injured. They don't have anybody.
I know,
who's worth a damn anymore? Who cares?
You've seen teams that are injured and look dead that play up to the competition because it's a bitter rival.
Dude, Jimmy Clausen's their quarterback. Okay. Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and the Pittsburgh offense right now is operating
unstoppable. Yeah.
And they don't even have Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So no, there's no chance. Kansas City has to lose, and I don't know how that's gonna. I mean, I could see them losing just because they're Kansas City, and I could see Alex Smith putting up a dud. But
Andy Reid will make a stupid decision with 2 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah, that's very possible. So I think that's our best shot. Is that we got to win out, and then Kansas City has to lose.
Yeah. Giants are also in a much worse situation than the Jets to make the playoffs. I thought they were dead, but it turns out they have like an 8% chance. They need to win out, and the Redskins need to lose out. But there's a lot of trickiness because the Redskins play the Eagles, and the Giants play the Eagles and the Redskins or something like that. So it's a lot of weird things going on with the Giants.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a Giants fan, do you even really want to make the playoffs at this point? It's been just a terrible season. Let's just put your heads down, get a good draft pick.
And now Odell's not even playing this weekend.
Well, he's appealing it on Wednesday, so we'll see if the appeal gets heard and seen.
What are your thoughts on that whole situation?
I mean, I think he should have been tossed out of the game when he turned himself into a missile and went after Norman in the head. Granted, I understand, like, you catch the second guy, and but they were both slapping helmets the whole game. I mean, if you're going to throw both of them out, fine. But, you know, there should have been an ejection. It went too far.
Did you hear what Francesa said about it?
I heard he was an embarrassment for
disgrace.
The Giants.
He's a disgrace to the organization, disgrace to the city, disgrace to his teammates, disgrace to humanity.
Yeah, and he said something about how he tarnished
Coughlin's legacy.
I don't know about all that, but...
Yeah, I mean, Frances is not known to over-exaggerate, so that's very out of character for him.
Right.
But I agree, Odell deserves the suspension. Everyone who's complaining about it, I mean, with the way the NFL has been the last few years, you can't target the head like that and not get suspended. That's just the way we are. That's the way the league is right now.
I mean, the play was over and he launched himself at the guy's head.
It was a total temper tantrum type move. He couldn't control his emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really wish he had been tossed out of that game, because this leads me to one of my Festivus grievances, because he scored, I don't know, he put up like 12 points in the fourth quarter, maybe 15 points in the fourth quarter against me. And it was just completely, completely unwarranted. And it led to my demise by less than 1 point. Still mad about this.
the Black Bat situation. How he's saying that the Panthers intimidated him pregame with a black bat taunting him on the field.
Sounds personal. That sounds personal. Why did you get intimidated by something that they do every single game? They bring these out every game, talking about like bringing the wood.
It's totally a backtracking move on Odell.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
What did he think he was going to do? He was going to get hit over the head with a bat, like in the middle of the field for hundreds of people to watch. It's like, come on, use your head, Odell. Don't use your head to target people, though. Fun fact about the Giants, though. You want to hear this? 2007, the Giants faced the undefeated Patriots and lost 38-35. In 2011, the Giants faced the undefeated Packers, lost 38-35. 2015, the Giants faced the undefeated Panthers and lost 38-35.
Oh, that's
and weird. As you know, in 07 and 11, they won the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, that's not going to happen this year.
Not going to happen this year, but... It's just weird how
things like that happen. Yeah, it's like strange.
I know it's like you can pick out anything and make it tie to something else, it's really all in context, because what happened to all the other games they lost and all the other games they won by margins that weren't that the, or the scores that weren't the same. But it is weird how that stuff kind of happens.
Yep.
All right. So, should be a good weekend of football. Definitely looking forward to the playoffs. I think it's going to be good, but, you ready to talk some Yankees? Ready to talk some baseball?
Let's do it. I know we're kind of, we have very, very few new things in the Yankees organization. A couple things have come out. So, you know, I'm excited to hear more about what Baseball America thinks about our farm system.
Yeah, no real news as far as transactions or anything like that. But I mean, this is a slow time. The winter meetings just ended. There are still a lot of big free agents out there, but I don't really expect the Yankees to be in on any of those guys. You know, Cespedes and Upton and all those guys. But Fangraphs put out a player projections. It was actually a very interesting article. I think I retweeted it, but definitely check it out if you have not read it. Sort of projects all of the players on the Yankees, their stats, and as well as their WAR and all that kind of nerdy baseball stuff. But I did take out a couple of things of note that I want to talk about. They basically said straight out right field is the Yankees' weakest position. I mean, Beltran had a pretty good offensive year, but I mean, a traffic cone would have been better in right field than he was last year. They actually, one nugget I took out of it was they said that Ref Snyder has experience in the minors in the outfield.
And college.
And his range projects to be league average in right field if the Yankees wanted to go that route as sort of a fifth outfielder behind Hicks. It actually kind of piqued my interest a little bit.
Well, you know, I like the fact that, well, first of all, this is Fangraphs. This has nothing to do with the New York Yankees.
And no.
Do I think the New York Yankees are going to do any of this? Probably not. Do I think it's probably an interesting idea? Yeah, because, one, we talked about this, and you really hit the nail on the head as far as the value of Ref Snyder right now in the Yankees organization as a second baseman. And the value is he's a Triple A second baseman. And what is the value for him on other teams? Well, he's valuable, but at the same time, the Yankees are at a at a disadvantage as far as bargaining and negotiating because they have very clearly a second baseman in the major leagues for years to come. So, to me, making Ref Snyder more of an asset by playing other positions and making him more flexible defensively only just increases his value. So, and I think this could be a good move organizationally, and he actually could contribute at a certain level in the major leagues if he had that versatility. So, you know, I think the guy's an athlete. We know that. The guy's extremely athletic and to me could probably play a number of positions, you know, if you were given time and you know, put into like a Zobrist type role defensively. So I think it's something definitely interesting, and I hope they look at it.
I'm under the impression that if you're a Major League Baseball player who's not a catcher or not like a big lumbering guy, you can play a league average right field.
Sure.
And, you know, there's some parks maybe where you'll get exposed, like Fenway, where right field has all those angles and it's gigantic.
Right.
But Yankee Stadium right field, you tell me Ref Snyder couldn't play a league average defense? Certainly better than what Beltran gave him last year. And we, I think, are in agreement that Ref Snyder could give them at least league average, if not better, production offensively.
So, yeah, no doubt.
So, I mean, his value in AAA is nothing to the Yankees because it's going to be very – if he goes and hits in AAA, what does that really do to his trade value? Not really much. And what does it do for his value to the Yankees? Absolutely nothing. So the Yankees should put him – you know, try and find some at-bats for him at the major league level, see if he can hit. If he can, that helps you. And also maybe a team, like you said, will want to trade for him.
Well, not even – I mean, I wouldn't even say at the major league level at that point even. You know, and I'm fine if he's – you know, totally – if he starts in AAA. But let's move him around in AAA. Get him that experience in the field at least in AAA so that he's familiar with, you know, going one game at second base, one game in right field, and just having him play those different positions to see how he reacts.
Exactly, because what good is him getting more reps at second base in the minors if he's not going to eventually be the second baseman in the Bronx? And he's not going to be. That's pretty clear at this point.
Right, right. No, I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, and that just kind of goes to the fact of this is a little off topic with Ref Snyder, but I think the exact same thing with Greg Bird. I think Greg Bird could absolutely play a league average right field. I mean, the guy's an athlete. He was a third baseman. He plays first base. There's no reason why, unless he's just completely god-awful in the outfield, which I have a hard time believing that. I think he's a baseball player, and I feel you could stick him in right field, and he could be better than Carlos Beltran, which isn't saying much. I know that. But still, this is the same type of thing I'd like to see the Yankees be a little bit more creative with their young guys defensively.
So I agree with that, but here's my one counterpoint. It's that Greg Bird will be the Yankees' starting first baseman in 2017. So do you really want to mess around with his position for one season when you project him to be full-time first base for a long time starting next year?
Yeah, because I don't really think it messes with him. Okay. I mean, he could get all the practice reps as much as he wants, So I don't think that messes with him.
I definitely agree with you. That, I was just trying to play devil's advocate.
Yeah. But some people actually think that. They're like, well, then you're going to ruin him as a first baseman. This is not the same thing as putting Jabba in the starting rotation and then taking him out and putting him in the bullpen in the middle of the season. This is a totally different thing. That's actually training your arm to do a certain thing, whether it's, you know, come out and fire 100 miles an hour for one inning or throw low 90s for six, seven innings. It's a totally different thing. It's a different mentality. So, no, I think position players have a lot more flexibility as far as getting developed in different positions.
Especially first base and right field.
Yeah, exactly.
I know they're not in the, you know, one's an infield, one's outfield, but really, come on. We're talking about two of the easiest positions on the field.
Right.
Okay, another thing that I found very interesting was that they project Betances and Miller to give the Yankees a combined four wins, so four WAR, which is more than any baseball total in baseball. That's any bullpen total in baseball, which goes to show you
How valuable
Betances and Miller are. If you were to trade Miller, that really brings down that value for the Yankees.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, we've spoken about this. I think the only reason that Miller's name is out there is just to float it. And basically Cashman saying, look, if someone's going to talk to me about Miller, I'm going to see what they have to say. And that's really all it was. You know, if there was a King's ransom that was brought to them, like something unbelievable, then Cashman would at least be in a position to hear that and make a move that's best fitting the New York Yankees long term. So I don't think he's going anywhere, especially after what we saw with Warren going and with Justin Wilson going. I just don't see them taking that huge of a cog out of the bullpen with those two guys gone.
I mean, Betances and Miller are their only two bullpen guys that we know what they're going to give them. Everybody else is a question mark right now.
Yeah. So, you know, I definitely see us going into the season with that back end. And you know, especially, I mean, not only that, you know, we don't know, there's so many unknowns in the bullpen. And there were a lot of unknowns going into last year as well, to be fair. But we had made moves for some of these guys. But there's a lot of unknowns in the starting rotation as well, which makes that back end so much more important.
And speaking of depth, the article talked about how the starting and or the pitching depth on the Yankees is their weakness, but the positional player depth is actually a strength of theirs. They project all of the bench players or role players like Bird, Hicks, Sanchez, Judge, if he actually played on the major league level, could give them a 1-2 wins above replacement if they got regular playing time, which goes to show you that they do have depth on their positional player roster. But the pitching staff is extremely top-heavy. We just talked about Betances and Miller. Then it's all question marks. The Yankees have Tanaka and Severino, who they both project to be pretty good. But then the rest is all question marks. So we already know Cashman's been looking for controllable starting pitching, but it really is an issue for this team next year.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as the guys that are still out there, you know, available in free agency, they're dwindling down. I mean, you're looking at, I think, Mike Leake, who's been rumored again. He was just recently in the news, I think yesterday, about, you know, his market heating up a little bit more. And then, you know, the Scott Kazmir. So there's not a lot of options out there right now. You know, I think Cashman has been going at this as he's going to get his guys via trade. That's been very apparent. So I don't know what he's looking at in that regard, but there's definitely a move that needs to be made in the starting rotation because like you said, the depth isn't good. And there's just a lot of guys with coming off of injuries that are just complete uncertainties going into 2016.
Absolutely. If everything breaks well for the Yankees, it could be fine. But as we know, it never everything never breaks right. Something
especially in the
wrong.
Pitching staff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not just the Yankees thing. It's everybody has injuries in the pitching staff. Nobody goes five deep for 30 starts. It just is impossible. George King, who writes for the Daily News, wrote that Sanchez is definitely the front runner to be the backup to McCann. And he could actually play more of a role than even a backup, which I know we mentioned and would like to see. The really only thing standing in his way is Sanchez, because there's nobody else that could.
Roman.
But if Sanchez plays even okay in spring training, I think he's going to get the job. The only way Sanchez doesn't get the job is if he totally stinks in spring training.
Yeah, I think he's got the job. Definitely he's on track to get this job because, you know, the kind of the bird rule that we talked about as far as rotating these guys and getting a lot of, the Teixeiras, McCanns, Beltrons, some DH time and getting the bats in there. I think Sanchez could play that exact role as well by just sliding into catcher more often if he is, you know, a guy who has proved or is proving that he can play on the major league level on a more consistent basis. That could get McCann some time at first base, which I know that the Yankees are going to start looking at some point because I do see McCann, you know, going back and forth to first base and DH at some point, especially when Teixeira's not here. I could absolutely see him doing that. So yeah, I think that Sanchez definitely gives more flexibility or provides more flexibility for the Yankees, kind of like the way that we think Bird can as well. So.
Yeah, and I know you alluded to the prospects. Baseball America released the Yankees' top prospect list this week, and Sanchez was number two on that list. So he's definitely thought of highly in the organization and around baseball. So,
well, and coming off that hot performance out in Arizona in the fall league, yep. His stock is not – it could not be higher. So that's something to definitely look at. And honestly, like, that's still – don't forget that that's a huge chip in Cashman's pocket still right now, that he's getting a lot of love through the media, through what his performance was, through Baseball America now. So, you know, he's not going to get any higher than this as far as value and prospect. So
let's talk about that prospect list. I was actually surprised. I expected Judge to be number one, but he wasn't even number two. Sanchez was number two. Number one was Jorge Mateo, who we talked about with Pinstripe Prospect, and he was very high on him. And I know Mateo was untouchable at the trade deadline, and that kind of took us by surprise because it's like, this is a shortstop who's so low in the organization. What do we really know about him? But he seems to be on the rise pretty quickly.
Yeah, they love the guy. The guy has a ridiculous amount of speed. He knows the base paths extremely well. He can, you know, he's a prolific base stealer. I mean, that's very apparent. Where's he going to play? I don't know. I'm not convinced that the Yankees believe that Didi is going to be their absolute future at shortstop. You know, I could see that a move being made there at some point if Mateo shows, you know, and proves to be the guy that they think he's going to be, because I think he projects as a better player long term. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, you know, it was an interesting listing. Gary Sanchez definitely bumped himself up with that fall performance.
Yeah, so it goes Mateo number one, Sanchez two, Judge three, and then the rest is guys that we've heard a little bit about. You know, Kaeperlein, is that how you say his name? James Kaeperlein, the pitcher.
And he was just drafted too. That's a pretty big rise for a kid that was just drafted.
Yep. And then number six is a pitcher who I have never heard of named Rookie Davis, but it's a great baseball name.
He's been playing really well too. He had a good season this past year. And, you know, that's the other thing you're looking at as far as the depth move. You were talking about how the depth of the starting pitching is an issue with the Yankees. And, you know, that was one of the reasons why Cashman made that move for Justin Wilson, to bring in two more guys that can contribute on, with the pitching staff and project themselves as starting pitchers. So, and Rookie Davis is another guy that we're seeing in that spot. So, we're seeing some depth, but it's just not, I don't think, major league ready yet.
Oh, definitely. A lot of these guys are lower in the system. Not many at AAA level, which is fine, though. I mean, their system was decimated for a decade. So it's being slowly built back up. Three shortstops appeared on the top 10 list, and that doesn't even include Kyle Holder, who was their first round pick this past year. So a lot of middle infield depth.
A lot of middle infield depth, which is good because it gives us flexibility, I think, with trade chips as well. You got some really hard throwers in there. Domingo Acevedo is a real hard thrower. I could see him showing up in a bullpen somewhere, possibly in the Bronx. I mean, as early as 2016, really. He's a guy that you can't ignore. And there's definitely some – you know, the other thing is we're not seeing the guys on here, some of the highly touted guys that have come along a lot – further along and are in AAA, the Mason Williams, the Heath Cotts. You know, I don't know if Baseball America still considers them prospects because of their major league time, but those are guys that we're not even seeing on this list, but are still there as valuable assets.
Absolutely, I expect one of those guys to get some outfield time for the Yankees this year.
Yeah, I think Slade Heathcott probably has the inside track on that.
Did they trade Mason Williams, or is he gone, or is he still on the team?
No, he's definitely still on the team.
Okay. All right, so you ready to get into a Christmas wish list for the Yankees?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we put out the question on Twitter. A couple people responded with what they'd like to see the Yankees do in the time between now and the start of the season. Slugger Bro says, spend $200 million, which the only reason I bring this up is because I actually really do not want to see that happen. And I don't think you do either.
No, I'm happy with the direction that the Yankees are going right now. And, you know, I don't want to see them make any giant splashes for some guy we're going to regret having in 3 years. So, no, I'm happy with what's happening.
I mean, the Yankees are losing so much off their books over the next couple of years with Tex, A-Rod, CC, Beltran. Do not put yourself in a hole. I know the free agent class was very, very good this year, but none of the guys really fit 100% on this team. Nobody was a glaring, you know, it's like, would David Price have been amazing and great for the starting rotation? Obviously, but did they really need to spend $200 million to get David Price? Absolutely not. So definitely do not want to see them get themselves in a hole any more than they already are. Joey Z. McFly says, how about Carlos Carrasco or Danny Salazar? Bro, I'm going to put in a wish list for 2018. Get me Harper. So, yes, Harper could be on the docket for a couple years from now. But Carrasco and Salazar definitely piqued my interest. I know there was the whole that Brett Gardner trade rumor with one of those guys a couple weeks ago. But either of those would be tremendous for this team.
I think those are two guys that they're definitely looking at as far as a trade, because one, the Cleveland Indians definitely seem like they're ready to deal. They've been talking with a bunch of teams about these two guys specifically. And, you know, as far as what we have, as far as a trade chip, I think we're positioned well to get one of two of these, you know, either one of these guys. Even if it's not Brett Gardner, I think our minor league system could actually pull off a trade like that. So, yeah, they're both. Carlos Carrasco is an innings eater. He had a really good season last year. Danny Salazar probably has a little bit more upside. A couple of years ago, he was also younger. He's younger. He's one of the higher, you know, one of the highly touted prospects coming into the league. He had a down year 2 years ago and then bounced back last year. So, I'd be happy with either one of these guys, you know, throwing into the back of our rotation.
Don VIP says he wants a right-handed power hitter and some insurance money to cover A-Rod, CC, and Teixeira. Right-handed power hitter. So
that's Justin Upton right there if you want one.
Well, but so Castro's right-handed. I'm not sure how much power he's going to give them, but I mean, he could hit 20 home runs. That would be probably a ceiling with, you know, more doubles, you know, 30 doubles, which is technically in today's baseball a power-hitting right-handed player. But could we see the Judgment Day come up mid-season and give them some pop?
I don't know about midseason. I could see him more of a September call-up. You know, from everything I'm hearing, he still has a lot of, you know, a good amount of work to do in AAA with his swing.
He does.
Unless Beltran falls off the cliff.
Yeah, but Greg Bird also had a ton to improve on between the start of the season and when he got called up, and we saw what he did when he came up.
Right, but he came up because of injury. He came up because, you know, there was a spot that was needed. So that's kind of my caveat. If we see Beltran go down and Judge is progressing, I could definitely see it earlier. But if not, and Beltran is kind of holding down the fort offensively, because I don't expect it defensively, then, you know, I could see him being a September call-up. But I really think they want him to develop further in AAA. And right now, honestly, like, there's really not a glaring spot for him at this point. So, you know, I kind of agree with that move.
So what is your Yankee Christmas wish list?
My Yankee Christmas wish list is to go out and sign Scott Kazmir. I think Scott Kazmir can be gotten for, you know, a medium-sized contract with medium years, and we don't have to give up anybody for him. And I think he's fits the bill, a left-handed pitcher who comes into Yankee Stadium, fits exactly what we need right now. I don't know why we're not really going after him more. I see all the rumors of you know, 6-7 teams that are going after him, and I do not see the New York Yankees in these trade rumors. So, you know, I'm hopefully Brian Cashman is being a snake in the grass and can come up and get him, because he's proved over the past couple of years that you know, he can stay healthy at this point in his career, and he's been very effective. So I think he's a great fit for this team. And, you know, I personally do not want to trade Gardner at this point. I think that unless we get an insane value for him, I think that, you know, Gardner has a lot of value on this team, and I'm looking for a bounce back year from him and Ellsbury at the top, creating that havoc that we saw in the first half.
Last I read, Kazmir is probably going to go back to Houston, but we'll see. I know he's a Houston native, but he didn't really have a great second half with them, so maybe he's discouraged by that. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hate Scott Kazmir, but it might take 3 or 4 years, and I'm not sure they're willing to do that. I would like to see them trade Gardner for a starting pitcher, because I think he's going to get them the biggest bang for their buck. And we also know what Brett Gardner is at this point. He's a good player. He's not a great player. He's also not a 150-game-per-year player. He's probably more of a 125, 130-game-a-year player because he gets injured too much. So I would like to see – obviously, I'd rather see Ellsbury go than Gardner, but that's just not going to happen. So sort of by process of elimination, Gardner's the best trade chip they have. And I think they would be better served to get a starting pitcher – than they would have Gardner on the team.
And you're kind of looking at that Carrasco-Salazar deal. That's kind of where your eye is.
I would love one of those guys, but I'm not sure the Indians... I mean, I know the Indians had an okay year last year. They were in the hunt, at least in the second half, for a wild card spot. But are they going to really trade for Brett Gardner, who's 32 years old?
I mean, yeah, that's why I think that if that trade were to happen, it would be more of a minor league package.
Yeah, Brett Gardner's a guy who will help you now, not in a couple years. So not really sure he's attractive to the Indians, but whoever you can get, I think you can still get a good starting pitcher for Brett Gardner plus somebody else in the minor leagues. So we'll see. All right, now for the good stuff. Airing of grievances. Fight your father, George. What do you have to air out this Festivus season?
Okay, I had one thing last night. Now I have two things. So I will start with the one that I was going to talk about last night, and that's shaking my fist at neighborhood kids. So I never thought I'd be
this
guy.
Get off my lawn kind of stuff?
Kind of, but this one's just, to me, more baffling. You know, I have a lot of tolerance. I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of kids. They're outside playing all the time. I love it. I really do. I think it's awesome that these kids are outside. They're playing wiffle ball. They're playing kickball. They're doing whatever. They're playing basketball. It's really cool. I'm glad they're outside hanging out and not inside. Just doing whatever inside, and they're consistently outside. And, like, all age groups, I mean, it's pretty amazing. Like, there's kids in high school playing with kids in elementary school. They just have, like, big games. So it's fun to see. But on Sunday, I was outside raking some leaves, and I saw these two kids that were – first of all, there's, like, about 10 to 15 kids out in the street in a cul-de-sac playing basketball. Awesome. Then there's two kids in an adjacent yard. It's a corner lot, and the kids are playing basketball on the street next to the lot, and these two kids are surrounded a box that's hanging from a tree. Okay, so this box, if you can imagine, like this big, like a TV box hanging, not a TV, like a square box, like an old school TV box, hanging from a tree, and it's just dangling, and these two kids are around it with bow and arrow, shooting at this box. So the kids are like probably within 5 feet. Then they back up, they're like 10 feet. Then at some point, they're like 15 feet, and they're shooting at this box. Then at one point, one of the kids like swings the box, or they're shooting at a moving target. they're pointed at the house. Then they like, they'll walk 20, 15 feet, and they'll be pointing at the street towards all the 15 kids, you know, in that direction. So that if they miss high, you know, one of these arrows is going to go and go into the group of kids. And these aren't like pointed arrows, but they're like fiberglass arrows with a dull metal tip, if you can imagine what those.
Yeah.
Where's the shoot those things?
Is this like stuff that you could buy at like Sports Authority or something?
Yeah. Like it's they're meant for recreational use. I mean, yeah. I feel like we used to use these in PE. I mean, I was in PE when we were using this stuff in like the early 90s. So
you were
probably
in like the 50s. So
yeah, so they probably wouldn't do it anymore. But I've used these things. Like they puncture the box. Obviously, they puncture like styrofoam. So they can puncture absolutely. And there's force behind these things. I mean,
they'll draw blood.
The new Nerf guns, if you get hit in the face, hurt. But this is like a long, regular size arrow, fiberglass arrow with a metal tip. Okay, it's a dulled metal tip, but it's a metal tip. And the kid misses at one point, and the arrow goes into my yard, which is across the street. And I'm like, dude, I'm like walking over. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Because I didn't know what they were doing at first. And they're like, oh, I'm looking for the arrow. I'm like, how did it get over here? They're like, we missed. I was like, guys, you need to be really careful. That's not a good idea to be shooting this arrow out with all these kids. They're like, oh, okay. So then I see them do over there still shooting this arrow. And they miss again. And it goes into the street. I'm like, okay, my first thought is, okay, kids are shooting arrow, whatever. They're just kids. It's fine. They're kids being kids. I really don't blame the kids. But I'm like, where are all these parents? There's 30 kids out here. Where are the parents looking to see these kids shooting at a freaking dangling box in the center of a yard in all directions, shooting arrows? These are 10-year-old kids, 10 to 12 years old, I'd say, shooting arrows at a box that's moving in the middle of a yard around other kids. So I go over there. I'm like, guys, we gotta stop the target practice. This is not a good idea. And I was like, do you guys live here? Because I didn't recognize one of the kids. And they're like, and they apologize. They're like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, you know, the arrow could have gone into the street where someone was driving by.
They could have shot their eye out.
I mean, that thing goes in and hits some kid in the head, and it's gonna cause damage. And there's no doubt about it. I just couldn't believe my eyes. And at some point, I was like, I got to go over there because I can't allow myself to see someone just get hurt and me not say anything. So I went over there and shut it down. They took the box down. Still no parents in sight. It was just an unbelievable occurrence to me with what was going on. I couldn't believe it. That's my grievance. The kids just being utterly ridiculous. It's more of the grievance with the parents, like allowing this to happen. Being like, oh yeah, sure, go shoot the box in the middle of the yard with the arrows with, you know, 20 kids laying around.
So you ruined their fun.
No, I didn't ruin their fun. I saved their lives from going to juvie and parents getting sued.
According to they're looking at it, you ruined their fun. So your house is now marked. You better watch out for eggs and flaming bags of poop.
These kids are in my yard all the time, so I have a very high tolerance for what's going on out there, and I have no problem with it. But when it comes to bow and arrow in the middle of the yard around a whole bunch of kids, and some of these kids were very young, you know what I mean, and like running in front of the box occasionally, they weren't shooting, but they weren't paying attention. It was just a disaster waiting to happen, so I had to shut it down. That was my one. The second grievance that I wish to air on this Festivus of 2015 is from last night and with Ben Watson and Drew Brees, and moreover, the Detroit Lions defense. I am in the semifinals of my fantasy football league, which is the pot's like, I don't know, like $1,600 for the winner. It's a significant pot. And I'm up by 12. I have Matt Stafford. He has Ben Watson. I'm up by 12 with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter of this garbage game that nobody cares about. And what did the Detroit Lions do? They allowed Drew Brees to march down the field and only throw the ball to Ben Watson. Ben Watson catches like 6 balls in the last 5 minutes of the game, including a touchdown from within 11 yards that seals my fate, and I lose by less than 1 point.
Fantasy football is so stupid.
It was unbelievable. I was at a point where there was like a minute 11 left. I remember looking at the clock. A minute 11 left. They're on the 11-yard – maybe it was on the 11-yard line. There was a minute left, whatever it was. No, there was 2 minutes left. They're on the 11-yard line. It's 1 point PPR, and I'm like, okay, I'm up by 7.5 or 7.6 at this point. I'm like, so if Ben Watson catches the ball in the end zone right now, he will have 7.1 points, and I will still win. Okay, I'm looking good. So what does Brees do? He checks down to Ben Watson on the 2-yard line for a catch and a 1 point PPR, which now says if you catch a touchdown, I lose, and that's exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened, and I am now fighting for place.
Yeah, that totally sucks. It's because, it, like you said, it was a garbage game. I forgot even that game was on
last
night.
And it was midnight. This was midnight last night.
Fantasy football is like an abusive relationship with me where November, December comes around and I absolutely hate it. I need to get out. I don't like it. I have stress. I'm not having fun. And when the season's over, I'm like, finally, I can just watch football and not worry about fantasy football. And then some time passes and it gets to be, you know, the middle of the summer and I'm looking at some rankings and I'm like, oh, I can't wait for fantasy football to come around. And I have a draft and I'm really excited and it's a lot of fun. And then it repeats that whole cycle. And that's what fantasy football is to me. And it's probably never going to change.
But in December, it's like at a point where if you're hunting for it, like all that stress, like you want to come out with your money at least. You know what I mean? Like at least with your money, at least some bragging rights to beat your boys.
Sure, but I've never won.
Well, yeah, that's a problem. You need to taste the sweet nectar of victory and get that check. I've won this league before, so I know how nice it is to get, you know, a $1,500 check right around Christmas. That's sweet.
It's so
a sweet Christmas present.
I'm in a league. Obviously, we have our website league, but the league that I care more about, sorry, Bronx Pinstripes, the league that I care more about is with some college, high school, and high school friends. And it's 10 of us, and it's a keeper league. And I think this is the fifth or sixth year of the league. And I've never made the playoffs. The highest I've finished, I think, is fifth or sixth. Mm. There's always stuff that happens with my team. Like last year, I had Peterson, and then he, you know, abused his kids and got suspended the whole year.
You didn't see that coming? You didn't see him?
No.
Somehow
I didn't
see that. That wasn't in his scouting report?
No. Anyway, so what I was saying is... one of my best friends from college, she's married to another one of my best friends. She has been in the league for the same amount of time, and now this is the second year she's in the finals. Second year in a row she's in the finals, and I think the third overall in the 5 or 6 years that we've been doing this league. And she just mocks me the entire time. Every time I lose, she's just mocking me. Why are you so bad at fantasy football? Why do you make all these trades? Why do you do all this stuff? And I just sit there pulling my hair out. I want to fight back, but she's got the scoreboard on me. And it's extremely frustrating. Why, fantasy football gods? Why do you do this?
Maybe you should reverse engineer her seasons and find out why she's doing this, because apparently she's got
it. I look at her moves, and she's got, you know how they have like the number of transactions that you do, and she's got like 7, and I have like 52.
Solid drafting. That's what that sounds like. Solid drafting. She's a smart one. She does her homework.
Yeah.
She can see into the future also with injuries and such.
Yeah, she's got the sports almanac from Back to the Future.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, if you need any fantasy football consulting, I'd be happy to help, you know. I mean, granted I had a bad year in this one, but I mean, I was in 4 semifinals. So I have tasted the sweet nectar of victory, but I'm also very, very active on the waiver wire.
Yeah, I mean, I am too. And the waiver wire is always luck, because if you have the number one spot when like a guy like Thomas Rawls is out there or Devontae Freeman or something like that, it's like you luck out and then I'll have the number one spot and there's nobody to pick up.
Yeah. I try to project injuries. Like I look at a guy and look at it like if he's taking a lot of carries and he hasn't been used to it, like I'll own his backup if it's a good spot to
totally. I will too. But I mean, how could you project Marshawn Lynch's injury? I mean, the guy's been a rock for his entire career. So it's just one of those things. All right, that was good. I feel a little bit better. How about you?
Yeah, I do feel better now. Especially because Ben Watson was so close. It happened just recently.
Frank Costanza was really onto something.
I think so too. I got my pole up. You have your pole up?
No, I gotta get a steel pole.
There you go.
Festivus is the 23rd, right?
I'm not sure the date.
Yeah.
I'll probably get crushed by RJ on that one.
Alright, well, any last words before we get out of here?
No, just, you know, if it's been a good year, we'll come back. You know that the day after, or the show after Christmas will be our 50th episode.
I am aware of that, yes.
And that's a pretty big deal to end the year with our 50th episode. So I'm excited for that. You know, I wish everybody a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah if you celebrate Hanukkah, whatever you're celebrating, and Happy Holidays. Have a good time with your family. have some drinks. Don't drink too much. Don't drink and drive. All that good stuff. And hopefully Santa gives you everything you want.
What he said. All right, we'll talk to you guys next time.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.